This is the home of the top life coaches, entrepreneurs, and success drivers. The Voice America Empowerment Channel.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its hosts are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Jeff Bogart is the investment advisor, not Yogic Investing.
Welcome to the Yoga of Money with your host, Jeff Bogart. Our program is all about relationships with money and how to manage your money instead of the other way around. Remember that mindfulness is the first step in mastering money management. Now, here is Jeff Bogart.
Namaste, everybody. I'm Jeff Bogart of Yogic Investing, and I'd like to welcome you again to the Yoga of Money radio show on the Empowerment Channel of Voice of America Internet Radio. Again, yogis, here we are in the middle of summer. I know it's cool down in the Midwest, but we have hot days ever around the country. Just to remind yourself, before you go in your yoga class, hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. If you get too hot in class, take child's pose. If you still feel woozy, it's okay to leave the class. Just signal your teacher so they don't worry about you. They don't want you hurting yourselves. And of course, after class, keep hydrating. So before I introduce my guest, Neil Pollack, I'd like to explain to you what yoga investing is and what it isn't. First, just like yoga, yoga investing is a multifaceted concept. Some may think it's all about socially conscious investing, which it is in part. But that'd be like saying yoga is only about your physical asana practice and nothing else. So each week I'm going to tackle a yogic investing issue. Today I'm going to tackle fear and greed. Today, to be a yogic investor, we must control our minds to eliminate negative actions such as fear and greed. Yoga understands that our minds are our own worst enemy, and it's not where our real intelligence lies. The mind creates unproductive feelings such as fear and greed, and the yogic scriptures discuss how destructive those feelings can be, especially on a societal level. When fear and greed become group emotions, they have the ability to destroy civilizations. This has happened since the dawn of civilization, when people went from using barter to money. Even though money is a much more efficient system compared to barter, it also comes with its dark side. A few historical examples of the danger of fear and greed are, one is the fable of the goose that killed the golden egg, and a real one, the tulip bubble crash in the 17th century Holland. At that time, one tulip bulb, hear me out, one tulip bulb sold north of $2,000. Well, needless to say, somebody was left holding the bag. Now, we all witnessed the ill effects of fear and greed during the housing bubble crisis in 2008, when the whole world was on the brink of an economic collapse. On a more personal level, fear and greed stop us from reaching our financial life goals. And nowhere is this more true when it comes to investing. A recent study by Dalbar, an economic tracking firm, showed that over the last 20 years, the S&P 500 index of 500 largest companies in America earned about 10% annualized return, while the average do-it-yourself investor had a return of less than 4% for that same time period. While substandard return combined with low savings rates will make sure we will not reach our important life goals, such as financial independence and paying for your kids' college education. So please, please, be a yogic investor and do not let your investment strategy be governed by fear and greed. Now I'd like to read Neil's biography, and then we're going to have some fun with Neil. It's going to be a big, fun show today. So Neil Pollack is the author of several best-selling books of fiction and nonfiction, including the yoga murder mystery Downward Facing Death, a scorching, sardonic look at the L.A. yoga scene. Also a book called Jubal, which us Jews find very funny, Alternate Dad. And his latest serialized yoga detective mystery is Open Your Heart. It's available on Amazon. Neil writes for lots of magazines such as Yoga Journal, and he even writes car reviews as well. Neil is a certified yoga teacher, of which that process was chronicled in his book Stretch. He is also the lead singer of a rock band, the Neil Pollock Invasion, and in his spare time, he's also a roller derby announcer. Really, Neil? In fact, Neil's alter ego, ex-LAPD chief. Okay. Neil has an alter ego, ex-LAPD detective and current yoga teacher, Matt Bolster. Matt even has his own Twitter account, and you can follow the satirical commentary on Neil Pollock on Twitter or email him with praise or offering of paying gigs. Namaste, Neil.
Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Excellent. It's a beautiful day here, kind of cooled off. What's going on in Texas? Is it still like 130 degrees in hell there?
As usual, yeah, until about Halloween.
Okay, gotcha. We won't even get into Texas politics. Maybe later if we run out of time. So let's just start the interview. Let me ask you, you're really an incredible writer. No, all kidding aside, I think you're just – I mean, I have to use my dictionary all the time in my Kindle when I'm reading your stuff. How did you become a writer?
Well, I've always been a writer. As far back as I can remember, I started writing stories when I was a kid, and I went to journalism school, and I became a professional journalist right out of college, and I've been making my living as a writer for the last 20 years.
Wow.
Mostly, a lot of it has been as a journalist, but I have written, I believe it's 4 novels now, a couple of books of short fiction, and a couple of memoirs. So, you know, my real ambition for the rest of my life is to support myself as much as I can by writing my novels.
Out of curiosity, who did you start with out of college? Newspapers, magazines?
Yeah, I got a job. My first job out of college was at a community weekly newspaper in Chicago. I went to college in Chicago. That was a part-time gig, and then I gradually worked my way into a full-time gig at a place called the Chicago Reader, which is like an alternative weekly newspaper along the lines of the Village Voice or the LA Weekly, in that vein of papers. It's much diminished compared to what it once was, but at the time I worked there, it was this enormous, you know, 200-page, 4-section behemoth that dominated Chicago nightlife. So it was a really fun and cool place to work.
Right. Now, the first book I read of yours was Downward Facing Death, and that's when I became a fan. Did you write that before or after becoming a yoga teacher? Oh, by the way, people, this is a yoga murder mystery that we're going to get into.
Yeah, well, Downward Facing Death was a pilot novel for the Kindle Serials program that Amazon launched. They decided to start running novels in chunks, in serialized chunks. And in my case, I did them in about 10,000 to 12,000 word episodes. And I'd written one novel with Amazon's Thomas and Mercer, a mystery and thriller imprint, my novel Jubal, and they liked it, so they decided to try something out. And I pitched them this idea about a yoga detective that I had doing in the back of my brain, and they thought it was funny. So I immediately started writing the book, and I believe it launched sometime last September, and then became a book on Amazon in January. It was serialized, and then they re-edited it to make sure it had some continuity, okay. take out any continuity errors, and then it was a book. So, you know, for me, I've been practicing yoga for 10 years. I lived in Los Angeles for a number of years, and I write for Yoga Journal, so I'm pretty tuned in to the pretensions and illusions of the of contemporary yoga scene. So Matt Bolster, my detective, and Downward Facing Death in the new book are just my way of gently, not always gently, but satirizing the scene.
Yeah, I'm not sure if gently is the right adjective. Maybe a sardonic right. Look at the LA yoga scene. You were in that scene, so that's great. Is Matt Bolster your alter ego, Neil? And how did he get his own Twitter account?
Well, I don't know how he got his own Twitter account. I have no idea where that came from. It's a complete mystery. I, of course, have nothing to do with it. But even though I retweet everything he puts up, but in terms of whether or not he's my alter ego, I mean, he's a pot-smoking yoga teacher in Los Angeles, and I suppose I share some of those things in common with him, but he's also single and a former homicide detective for the Los Angeles right. Police Department. I am neither of those things. So, yeah, I mean, you know, he had some aspects of my personality, and you could say his insights are my insights when it comes to yoga, but he's also a character who I've created. And mm-hmm. I use him maybe as a platform for some of my opinions, but you know, he does his own thing.
Yeah, did Matt initially do yoga to impress his girlfriend or women?
As the story goes, he didn't do it to impress a girlfriend, but he was kind of at a low ebb in his career. You know, being a cop can be stressful. He was drinking, he was doing drugs, he was having unsavory sex, and you know, that all sounds good, but after a while, you know, these things can become attachments, and they can lead us down a path of unhappiness. So he just went to a yoga class at the Hollywood YMCA, which is a great place to do yoga, by the way, and with a girlfriend or someone he was seeing, and really enjoyed it, and just kind of followed down the path, and within a year or so had quit the force and was on his way to becoming a yoga teacher with all the financial pitfalls that entails.
Here's another question for you. Do LA yogis really smoke that much pot, Neil? There's a lot of pot smoking going on.
That LA yogi does. I know I know some pretty hardcore stoner yogis. So it's possible. I mean, perhaps it's exaggerated for fictional effect, but I know plenty of people who are stoned all the time.
Okay. Austin, LA, of course. So we've got about 2 minutes. Let's talk a little bit about, then we'll go to break and maybe come back. The new Matt Bolster novel, Open Your Heart. Is that also serialized?
Yeah, it's currently being serialized on Amazon. And I sort of take the character and follow the story a little bit from the first book and just plunge him into the middle of a new mystery. We've released 3 episodes so far. And there are 3 more to come, and then it will also be re-edited and then re-released as a full book. And I'm hoping to do more. I mean, it won't come as a surprise that the character doesn't die at the end of the book. I like the idea of having a fictional platform to explore the yoga scene, because, you know, when you're writing about it non-fictionally, you don't want to hurt actual people's feelings, because even the most venal and perverted of our yoga gurus, at the end of the day, there's still a core of goodness, and they're still trying to, you know, they're still spreading yoga to people. So I don't want to, you know, write
sure.
nasty, snarky, you know, nonfiction essays about yoga, because I feel like those are actually kind of counterproductive. Mm-hmm. I often don't like yoga articles in magazines and newspapers, because I feel like they make yoga sound like a total, den and
right.
sex and iniquity, which admittedly my book does as well, but my book is a clearly exaggerated satire.
Obviously. You know, we have about 30 seconds to the break. I just remember Jeremy Piven going to an ashram in India on Travel Channel. He complained about the LA yogis, and the guru just patted him and said, Jeremy, they're doing yoga. Don't worry about them.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, at the same time, they're doing yoga, but there are just so many. There's so many pretensions and misunderstandings, and I feel like, you know, contemporary yoga is so obsessed with the physical and so body centric, and it just kind of, it seems to me to be another vehicle to make beautiful people feel more beautiful.
Right.
And I don't.
Neil, hate to interrupt you, but we're about up to the break here, the commercial break, so
yes,
we can pick up that thought as soon as we come back, and hopefully we'll be taking phone calls when we come back.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Do you want to grow your wealth the smart way, the yoga way? Using the life planning process inspired by a Buddhist teacher, Jeff Bogart will put you on a path, a vision quest of your future without the burdens of worrying about money.
Schedule your no-obligation consultation today. Call Jeff at 216-292-8700 or email him at jeff@yogicinvesting.com. At Yogic Investing, we're in the business of creating wealth and abundance for you, the modern yogi. Do you ever feel stuck on a hamster wheel? Constantly running but getting nowhere? Ready to try something different? The secret is actually quite simple. When you fall in love with yourself, everything else falls into place, personally and professionally. Each week, you can find out how to choose your energy and change your life with your host, Deborah Jane Wells. It's time to get unstuck, reclaim your personal power, and recapture your zest for living. Tune in to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
What's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America show or host? For the latest news, visit the iRadio blog at iradioblog.com.
You are listening to Jeff Bogart with the Yoga of Money. To reach Jeff or his guest today, please call 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send an email to jeff@yogicinvesting.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Namaste. A quick reminder that if you're concerned with having gun or weapon manufacturers in your investment portfolio or investing in companies that really degrade the environment, Yogic Investing has some really good solutions for you, socially responsible or sustainable funds. Give us a call. We can talk about it. And real quick, I want to tell you about the world's first online virtual yoga conference hosted by one of my favorite yoginis and good friend, Suzanne Bryant. The conference will be held August 12th through 16th. It'll feature some of the world's greatest yoga teachers, Sean Korn, Baron Baptiste, Cindy Lee, just to name a few, Rodney Yee as well. Best of all, it's all free, no hatha yoga. You'll just hear from these people about yoga philosophy, which we all need to know more about. For more information, go to SuzanneBryant.com. Back to Neil. So you want to finish that thought, Neil?
Well, I was just saying that I feel like yoga is a little over-focused on the physical, and because of that, I find sometimes classes, especially in sort of the trendier areas of the country, are harder and more dangerous than they need to be, even if the teachers are good and know what they're doing. So I have to approach that kind of yoga with great care, and I think everyone should.
Yeah, so they kind of push the envelope too far physically, and they're not getting into the mental, more spiritual aspects. And honestly, I will say it took me till I got injured to really get into the more spiritual aspects. And it's really changed my life.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. I mean, I'm continually getting injured in new ways, but the injuries are less frequent and they're less severe. There's just a lot of you sort of swinging your leg around behind your head and, you know, trying to sort of overstretching the groins and the hamstrings. And I don't necessarily feel like teachers don't include spiritual aspects or breath control or anything like that, but I do feel like a lot of times the asana that people do in the West is just too hard.
Hey, Neil, we got a call from you from Kim from Cleveland. Hi, Kim. How are you?
Good. Thanks, Jeff.
You have a question for Neil?
I do. First of all, Neil, I love reading Matt Bolster's tweets. They make me laugh all the time. And
thank you.
Secondly, I have a daughter who's 16, and she really wants to be a writer. It's her whole focus right now. We're going to be looking at colleges in about a year, and I just want to know what advice you might have for her. Should she major in journalism, or what kind of college should she start looking at?
Oh, boy. I mean, if she wants to be a journalist, I wouldn't discourage her from journalism school, although you should know that that profession is changing very rapidly and the job market isn't particularly good. But, you know, far be it for me to discourage a young woman from pursuing her dreams. In terms of being a writer, I mean, it's great to study writing, but it's not necessarily the only path to becoming a writer. If you want to be a writer, you should just write, and you should experience the world as broadly as possible. And so, any major in college is fine for becoming a writer. I know writers who were, who studied science, who studied history, who didn't go to college at all, although, that's not what I would encourage for you, but there's no real one path, and the only thing she needs to do in order to pursue this is to just write, and to keep writing, and to keep reading, and to stay interested. And I don't know, what her grades are like, or if she wants to stay close to home, so I can't recommend any specific college. And I also haven't attended college in 20 years, so things
yeah. She's a great student, and she writes all the time. Should she just try, as she gets more experience, to just start submitting her short stories to, to websites or another venue?
Well, I'm glad you said websites, because sort of that traditional path of submitting stories to literary magazines and sort of print magazines is pretty closed, especially for someone who's just starting out. So, yes, there are lots of websites that publish original fiction. They may not have a lot of readers, but they're there, and sometimes they have people who will actually work, who will edit the stories. And, she could also publish them herself. There's no shame in that. I published my novel, Jubal, myself, before Amazon's Thomas and Mercer Mystery and Thriller imprint.
Hey, I hate to cut you guys up, but we have, speaking of Jubal, we have Joe from New York City on.
All right.
That's what he was interested in. Hey, Joe. Well,
good luck to the previous caller, by the way. Hi, Joe.
Love the show. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Joe.
Neil, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the St. John's Wonder Five, specifically Ali Shuckman, who is a cousin of mine, was a cousin of mine.
Wait, I'm sorry, what's the name of the team again?
The St. John's Wonder Five.
Oh, my book, Jubal, is about the early days of sort of semi-pro Jewish basketball. It's set in the 1920s and 1930s, and I don't really go into the college game much. So I will admit that I don't know much about Ali Shuckman.
These guys, the St. John's Wonder Five, they played together in 27, 28, and 29 and 30, and they won 64 out of 68 games.
Well, and did they then go on and play professionally or semi-professionally after that?
Yes, the same team won the championship of the American Professional League 2 years after they finished their St. John's careers.
Neil, was Jubal based on a real team?
Yeah, Jubal was based on the South Philadelphia Hebrew All-Stars, or the South Philadelphia Hebrew Association. They were known as the SPAs. And my book is set in the late 30s. And I'm not real familiar with the team that Joe is talking about, but it's set in that same world. And what people mm-hmm. might not know is that college and professional basketball, from I'd say the late teens all the way up until the early 50s, was almost an entirely Jewish game. There were Irish teams, there were a couple of black teams, but the game evolved in the Jewish ghettos of Manhattan and Brooklyn and Philadelphia and Cleveland and Newark and other sort of heavily Jewish urban areas in the States. And yeah, they and the Jews dominated the game, and they developed the game, if you were to go back in time and watch those games now, they didn't really jump. There was no dunking. It was all set shots. But, some of the patterns, the defensive patterns that you see now, just aspects of the game that you see today, evolved.
I think that they really developed the sharing and caring that still is the hallmark of championship teams today.
Wow, like that, sharing and caring.
No, I would agree. I mean, passing, zone defense, those sorts of aspects of the game definitely evolved from the Jewish game, and you still see a few remnants of that, and they call it the Jubal, even today. I mean, Larry Brown grew up as a fan. And a coach, David Stern, the god, the boss god of basketball.
What about Red Auerbach?
Red Auerbach was part of that scene. I mean, he's not with us anymore, but yeah, he was. Right. He was all. That was all part of that. The first, you know, the first basket made in the NBA was by a Jewish player in 1946.
Hey, guys, yeah, we got 4 minutes to the break, so I'd like to take another call. Thank you so much for calling, Joe.
You're welcome.
We hope you go back to the show. We have Fadia. She's been a regular caller all three shows. I think she's from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hi, Fadia.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm good. You guys were talking about, hi, Neil.
Hi, how are you?
I'm
good,
thanks.
We're
going to
talk
about how some of these yoga practices have become more like intense cardiovascular aerobic classes and less like what I would consider like traditional asana practices.
Are you a yoga teacher, Fadia? May I ask that? Do you teach yoga?
Yes, I do.
Okay, go on.
And I just actually got back from taking a little vacation in Denver, and the classes I was taking were just intense. They were ridiculous, you know. And all I could think was, this is so far away from my training as far as how I see yoga. And I'm not saying my way is the right way. I'm just saying there's definitely room for injury in that environment. And I just want you to talk more on that.
Yeah, I could definitely talk more on that. It's interesting that you took it in Denver, because I feel like Colorado and California, there's a lot of sort of intense athletic workout-based yoga that comes out of those places. And I know the kind of class you're talking about, and, you know, it can be good. It can be. I do a class, you know, I practice mostly at home, but I'll do a practice somewhat like that once or twice a week. But the rest of my yoga practice tends to involve, you know, slower, more gentle asana and yin yoga, which is a pose that's held for a long time, passive hold. And, you know, I can spend 45 minutes just kind of working on my hips and working on, and then some meditation and throw sort of a deep yoga nidra relaxation in there. I guess, you know, there is no one way to do yoga, but the problem is that tends to be the majority way these days. That's what most people's introduction to yoga is. And I think it scares people off, and it leads people into thinking that yoga should be like that, and so they practice unmindfully.
It's a little confusing, I think, and a little misleading, and it sort of stops. It looks a lot like aerobics to me, you know, like I've taken aerobic classes, and to me this looks a lot like aerobics. So
the flows don't make that much. Well, I'm saying the flows don't make that much sense. A lot of times they're not really focusing on the right body parts. There's a lot of whipping your leg around behind your head. A lot of ego-looking poses, like what's the one I hate? Where they flip their dog and they call it Wild Thing. It just makes no sense. You're looking at this. You know, you've got a sort of. It's like the game of telephone. You're 10 teacher trainings down the line from the original teaching. And so you've got people who barely are trained themselves teaching other teachers. And so what you end up with is a sort of kind of watered down gymnastics.
Yeah.
Well, in some ways it's always been a watered down gymnastics, but it's for young women with long legs, and we're not all young women with long legs.
Nothing wrong with that. Guys, we got about 30 seconds to go.
Well, go ahead.
So, Fadia, ask your question. Maybe he'll go after the break and, you know, revisit the question.
Yeah, so you can revisit it, but thank you, because I really think that's something that needs to be discussed and looked at, just because it's kind of all wacky right now. And I think people need to slow down a little bit and look inside. And when they're moving that fast, they're just not slowing down, you know?
I agree, although I also call it a gateway drug. It's like eventually you're going to have to slow down.
Wow, that's funny. Well, thank you very much.
Gateway drug. Thanks for calling, Fadia. Call again next week. You're 3 for 3, honey. We love you. Thank you so much.
I will. All right, you guys. Namaste.
Namaste, Fadia. You know, Neil, I think we're still on, aren't we?
I don't know.
Yeah, here we go. There's the music. You know, I don't want to talk about acro yoga just for a little bit, because I found out really what it was meant to be and what it became after the break.
Okay, I'll talk about that.
Here's the music. We'll be going to break pretty soon. We'll talk about the ropes and the ribbons and the beautiful people who do acro yoga. But I found out who really invented acro yoga, or the benefit. So here we are going to the break again, and we'll pick it up in a few minutes. Thanks for listening, guys.
going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America show or host. For the latest news, visit the iRadio blog at iradioblog.com.
Do you want to grow your wealth the smart way, the yoga way? Using the life planning process inspired by a Buddhist teacher, Jeff Bogart will put you on a path, a vision quest of your future without the burdens of worrying about money. Schedule your no-obligation consultation today. Call Jeff at 216-292-8700 or email him at jeff@yogicinvesting.com. At Yogic Investing, we're in the business of creating wealth and abundance for you, the modern yogi.
Where can you listen to some of the world's top life coaches, ready to share success tips and entrepreneurial guidance? The Voice America Empowerment Channel will do just that. Hear about personal growth, building a better business, inspirational life stories, and personal branding. You'll find it every day at voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate. Change. Succeed.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are listening to Jeff Bogart with the Yoga of Money. To reach Jeff or his guest today, please call 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send an email to jeff@yogicinvesting.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, we're back with Neil Pollack. Just want to remind everybody, if you'd like our newsletter, which is fun, we stay away from financial nerdy stuff. For instance, I wrote an article called Leave My Yoga Jesus Alone and a new one, How the Stock Market is Like an Angry Italian Woman in a Fellini Movie. Email my assistant, Kim, at yogicinvesting.com, or go to the Facebook page and we'll send you out the newsletter. So back to Neil. I just kind of mentioned Acro Yoga, and I'll tell you why, because obviously people who do it are just gorgeous, talented, but I found out that Iyengar actually created ropes for support as he got older, not for acrobatics, but so he can continue doing yoga as he aged.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of acro yoga. I feel like that's another thing that we were talking about. It's like you're having to do all these athletics, but with another person. You have to touch people, and you have to balance people. You have to balance people on your feet, and there's all kind. You know, it's like Cirque du Soleil. You know, if I were capable of doing that, I would belong to Cirque du Soleil, or I would take a circus arts class. You know, I don't find acro yoga relaxing. I find it extremely stressful and pretty pretentious. Although there are people who swear by it, so I don't want to completely diss it. But don't necessarily trust when somebody says, "Hey, we're going to go take an acro yoga class," because if you don't like touching, and you know, I'm a very selective toucher. Like I don't want to be pit to pit with some random person in a yoga class and be going up and down some dude's back, some dude's sweaty back. It's just not, I've done it, but I don't like it. So that's my highly biased opinion.
Okay. You became a yoga teacher though, right? You are a yoga teacher.
I went through a full Ashtanga training with Richard Freeman, mm-hmm. who is for lack of a better term, master yoga teacher based out of Boulder, one of sort of the original American students of Patavi Joyce, a very wise and brilliant man and an incredible yoga teacher who's been very influential but very successful, but isn't like a celebrity yogi in the sense that he's a humble guy, but very successful. Right. And it was really hard. I mean, I blew a hamstring out in the middle of it, and that was created some very difficult lessons for me. But I was kind of sitting in class, bound up in Baddha Konasana, while everyone else was they were all jumping around with their legs behind their heads. It was like all professional Ashtanga teachers. It was kind of like being accepted to graduate school at Harvard before having attended high school. I don't know how I got in. I guess they thought my application. They thought my application was funny, but I did it. I made it through. I sweated out all my samskara, And so technically I'm certified, and I've done some other continuing education stuff since then. So I know a bit about yoga, but I don't teach regularly.
But you wrote a book chronicling this, right, called Stretch?
Yeah, although technically the teacher training takes place after. I did do a two-week intensive workshop with Richard Freeman in Thailand, and that's in the book. But my teacher training is set after that, mostly just because I needed to get paid to write the book, and so I had a deadline, and, okay. I finished it, even though the teacher training would have made for, you know, would have made the book probably 100 pages longer and possibly, you know, better. And at the end of Stretch, I'm just about to become, quote-unquote, become a yoga teacher. So I don't really teach regularly. Occasionally I'll do a conference or something, if I'm also doing a reading for my books, but, I don't have a regular class because I travel too much. And if you're going to have a regular yoga class, you want to be there for your student. You don't always want to be jetting off and giving them substitutes.
Now you got in trouble with the Jib Muktes. I remember reading about that.
Did I get in trouble with them? I mean,
yeah.
Well, I went to the Jiva Mukti Yoga Center in New York, and I've been eating these really strong pop candies while I had a bunch of them, and I ate a couple, and I went with a friend to this Jiva Mukti class, and I was drugged out of my mind, and the teacher was she was Jiva Mukti. You have to give a talk before every class, so there was this long pretentious 15-minute lecture that I was kind of scoffing at. And then we started the class, and it was one of these extremely hard, sweaty, athletic yoga classes. And there were 100 mm-hmm. people. There were 100 people in the room, and it just felt very weird and cult-like. And the instructor and I were sniping at each other. So finally, at some point, I shouted, "This is bullshit." Rolled up my mat, stormed out of the room, sweaty and disgusting. And I haven't seen that person who took me to that class since. It was bad. It was not skillful. Let us say, and how I handled it, but I was upset, and I've never been one to hide my emotions. And then later, I was not able to practice non-attachment. And then later, I ran into that teacher at a Yoga Journal conference in San Francisco, mm-hmm. and she didn't remember me or the incident. She's always floating around on a cloud of bliss, you know. But we had a nice exchange. Let's put it that way. She smelled very good when she hugged me.
Excellent. I once got in trouble in Bikram because I had to leave the class to go pee, and I got scolded. But nonetheless, I want to talk about a couple months ago, you wrote an article, a great article for Yoga Journal with great sensitivity, and it said, what to do if you get an erection in yoga class. I don't think you made that headline either, but it was actually a very well-written article. You want to talk about that? And is that why maybe young men don't go to yoga class?
I don't think that's the main reason why you don't see more young men in yoga class. To be fair, you also see a lot more guys in yoga class than you used to. So, I just think that, I write the men's yoga blog for Yoga Journal, and that is a very man-specific problem. Not so much because you're surrounded by beautiful women who are doing crazy things with their bodies, but just because, you're moving around and you're wearing shorts and it gets kind of rubby and, sometimes you get a boner. It's part of the experience. And, my advice was, as with all the other yoga, which is that eventually, it'll go away. It's impermanent. Hopefully it'll just go away naturally, and it will, but, there's no, it happens. It doesn't happen a lot, but it happens.
They can always go to child's pose.
That's not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
I would not invert at that moment. I would not do a headstand. It would call attention to certain aspects of your physiognomy or your physique, let's say.
Let's go back to the newest serial, the Matt Bolster. It's called Open Your Heart.
Yes.
It's also in serial form. Does an author get paid differently for serial form? Tell us about that. Tell us about the book and serial writing.
The first book, Downward Facing Death, was, I would say, more or less a satire of Bikram yoga culture. And and then Open Your Heart is my take on the Anyasara scene, and sort of some of the pretensions and humor involved with that, although that scene is greatly diminished since its founder was brought low by scandal last year.
Right.
I in terms of getting paid, I mean, you know, I'm not making a fortune doing these. These are, you know, serialized yoga detective novels, and they haven't they've done fine, well enough, but they haven't taken off in any substantial way. So I get an advance that allows me time to spend a few months writing, but you know, it's not like I can, you know, close the doors and stop working forever. I have to keep going.
Well, the people out there who haven't read Downward Facing Death, the ending is so phenomenal. I won't tell you what it is, but it's not what you think it is. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I would say the same. Thank you very much. I would say the same holds true for Open Your Heart as well. It's sort of right. I it's not just a satire of spirulina beverage sipping LA yogis. It I write a lot about yoga myth and philosophy, and there's a lot of action, a lot of fist fights, more fighting than you would expect in a yoga book. And there's always, you know, there's murders. So
car chases? Any car chases?
There's a car chase in Open. There's one in Downward Facing Death, and there's also some car action in Open Your Heart. Bolster drives a 1998 Nissan Sentra. Not an impressive car, but he's a broke ass yoga teacher. So in general, most yoga teachers don't drive very nice cars. I don't really trust a yoga teacher who has anything fancier than a Subaru Impreza.
Not a Prius.
Maybe a Prius if it's the second income. You know, that's acceptable. My yoga teacher in LA drove a Prius, but she had a husband who, made enough money so that she could drive a Prius. And I drive a Prius as well. So
can I go back to the Anyasara scandal, the John Friend scandal? One thing I never understood, and I have nothing against John at all. God bless him. He got in trouble for cheating on his girlfriends, plural, not girlfriend, girlfriends. How did that happen?
Well, I don't know. I don't have an article about the scandal up in front of me, so the specifics aren't there. But there was some deal with them, draining money from his employee pension fund in order to build this new center. He had people like arranging shipments of pot, to his home. Yeah, he was like basically asking people to sort of buy and ship drugs for him. And then there was this Wiccan sex coven that he was in. So it was, it was pretty crazy. It was a pretty crazy
yoga, drug, sex, and rock and roll go together is what I'm hearing.
Well, here's the deal, these big time yoga people are rock stars. They are treated like rock stars. There's a whole circuit of yoga festivals, the Wanderlust festivals that equate yoga and rock and roll, and not it's not just here's some yoga and here's some rock and roll. The yoga teachers are the real rock stars, and it requires a lot of mental fortitude and centeredness to not consider yourself a rock star when you're a yoga teacher. And, I have a band and it's fun to be on stage and it's fun. But at the end of the day, once you start looking at yoga as performance, as a performative art, unless you're actually performing a display of asana, it kind of defeats the purpose, I feel like. And I feel like
we hear that old music saying we're going to hit a commercial break real soon. But all right, I love that perspective. We can pick it up. And if whatever you want to talk about, I wouldn't mind talking about being an agnostic Jew and being a spiritual yogi. That's kind of mean. But whatever you want to talk about the next segment, that's fine.
I shall do my best.
Correct. So we'll be right back on the Yoga of Mani here on Voice America Empowerment Station. Thanks so much for listening.
Get the news on our shows and other happenings by following us on Twitter. Find us at VoiceAmericaTRN or twitter.com/VoiceAmericaTRN.
Do you want to grow your wealth the smart way, the yoga way? Using the life planning process inspired by a Buddhist teacher, Jeff Bogart will put you on a path, a vision quest of your future without the burdens of worrying about money. Schedule your no-obligation consultation today. Call Jeff at 216-292-8700 or email him at jeff@yogicinvesting.com. At Yogic Investing, we're in the business of creating wealth and abundance for you, the modern yogi.
What if you were willing to be controversial, choosing kindness instead of judgment, willing to stand out from the crowd, being a leader in creating a new reality, even if others don't follow? You can make a difference. Start by tuning in to The Value of Controversy. Each week, our hosts will bring you the tools to help create the world that you want to live in and explore what's possible when you choose from the controversy of consciousness. Listen for The Value of Controversy every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are listening to Jeff Bogart with the Yoga of Money. To reach Jeff or his guest today, please call 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send an email to jeff@yogicinvesting.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, back with Jeff Bogart, host, great guest, Neil Pollack. Again, I want to remind you about Suzanne Bryant's virtual yoga conference, August 12th through 16th. Great yoga teachers. It's all about yoga philosophy. You'll do it online, and it's free. Go to SuzanneBryant.com, one of my favorite people in the whole world. Okay, Neil, so let's get back to it. What do you want to talk about now?
Hey, man, you're the host. Cue me up.
Okay. Well, here's me. You're Jewish, too. I'm an agnostic Jew at best, but for some reason, yoga got me into the spiritual world. Have you felt that at all?
I've been the exact same boat. As John Stewart once said, I'm Jewish for the delicious snacks. You know, I like the food. I enjoy throwing a Passover Seder, but more because it's, you know, just an excuse to be with family and friends and to laugh and to sing and all that. So yoga, when I discovered it and when I got deeper into it, you gave my life a spiritual dimension that just wasn't there. And what's nice about yoga is it doesn't require fealty or adherence to any one deity. It just, you're allowed to just sort of tap into the now, for lack of a better term. You're able to live in the present moment and be happy in that. And one of the things that yoga philosophy posits is that there is a sort of unknowable eternal reality that is beyond our direct comprehension, but that it's there and that we're all part of. Whatever it is completely unclear, and any attempts to explain it inevitably end up looking and sounding ridiculous. But if you read the great works of yoga philosophy, the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, the Yoga Sutras, and so on, well, first of all, they're incredibly boring. And ridiculous, and with the exception of the Gita, which has a story, and are ridiculously arcane, but there is that underlying magic behind it all. And what you're trying to do when you practice asana or meditation or mantra chanting or kirtan singing or whatever the hell your particular bag is when it comes to yoga practice, you're trying to clear away the waste products of the mind, and right. Sort of as Richard Freeman, the metaphor he uses is unfogging the mirror or cleaning the lens, and so you're able to use your body and your mind as a vehicle to sort of see clearly, into the true nature of reality. Now, I don't know how much of that I actually believe, and how much of it I'm just sort of interpreting based on what I've read and what I've experienced, but it's there, and it's very specific. And that's one of the main reasons why people feel so good after a yoga class, is because they've been able to get out of their head. And you know, if their bodies feel better, it's because a lot of times one of the things that keeps us from experiencing the joy of reality in its sort of essential nature is physical pain and discomfort. So we practice asana in order to relieve that pain and to allow us to move through the world more happily.
Asana is the physical practice, right?
Right. The posture.
You know,
yeah.
Can I ask you a question? Have you seen Suzanne Bryant's movie Yoga Is?
I have not. I try.
I highly suggest you. It's on Netflix now.
Okay, I have Netflix.
This is different.
All right.
She captures the essence of what you're talking about in her film.
Okay.
She used yoga to help her grieve for her mother's death. Her mother died young of breast cancer. Then she went on this journey, and she kind of made the intangible tangible. And yoga's become her life now. She was kind of a photojournalist. Now she's doing yoga. It's phenomenal. Okay, so back to Neil Pollack, though, right?
Well, I guess we can talk about this, too. I like talking about this stuff. Yeah.
How about, Texas is a pretty conservative state, except for Austin. You think these changes are going to chase you out of the state?
I mean, I have no plans to move at the moment, but I'm not encouraged, let us say, by the political direction of Texas. Although there is, a lot of movement toward the blue end of the ledger as well. Texas is there's four major urban areas, five if you count El Paso, that, are democratically dominated, or at least have substantial blue sections. So it's not as though progressive thinking is completely out of the realm of possibility here. But there's a pretty heavy good old boys network that makes it hard to stomach sometimes.
Right. So tell me how you became a roller derby announcer.
Well, I've lived in Austin a couple of times. I lived here in the early aughts, and then I moved to Los Angeles in a disastrous attempt to become a television writer for a few years. And then I came back here at the end of 2011 and was just looking for something to do and looking for a way to get ACK involved in the community in Austin. And I saw a notice on Facebook, or my wife saw, I think, a notice that the Texas Roller Girls were holding auditions to be for announcers, that they needed new announcers for the Derby. And I like roller derby. I'd been to it a few times in LA, and I'd always wanted to be a sports announcer. So I went to the auditions. They were held at a beer garden, like an old fashioned Texas beer garden. And, there were about 25 people who showed up to audition and had been poorly promoted, and half of them were either completely crazy or completely incompetent. And so my odds were automatically very good. And it turned out they were hiring 6 to 8 people to do various roles. So it wasn't hard, basically.
It's like big-time wrestling. You have a role to play?
There are some people who do sort of the crowd wrangling, the cheering, getting people to cheer. They have more roles, but I'm more of a straight-up sports announcer. My job is to call the action, both on the streaming podcast that they do, and also on the mic as the action is going on, and also to sort of read ads. And then I do post-game interviews with the skaters, which are always horrible and disastrous because they don't want to be doing them, and I really don't want to be doing them, and they're uncomfortable, but I do them. And sometimes I'll do like a little halftime show stuff too. So, it's been exactly what I expected it to be. And I can now say that I have had the experience of being a semi, I mean, I'm not getting paid, but I say a semi-professional sports announcer under my belt.
We've got about 6 minutes to go, but really quickly, I want to say you do have a new album. Your band's what, the Neil Pollack Invasion?
Yes, it's not a new album. It's a re-release of our album from 10 years ago, but there is a new song on it. But this local record label decided to bring it back from the grave and put it out on LP. And so that's been real fun, too. And, all this stuff kind of comes down to the fact that, I thank yoga for this, because I'm open to whatever arises in my life and anything that happens, any opportunity that comes up. I don't say yes to everything, but I'm open to experience, and yoga is a great gift for that kind of thing. So I'm allowed to wear a lot of different hats and have a lot of different roles, and I'm extremely grateful for that.
Neil, we're going to have to close on that note, so we're about running out of time for the show, but I'd really like to thank you for being on. I really enjoyed it. And out there, don't forget about neilpollack.com. He's got, I've read most of his books, and I'm going to read the new one real soon. You can buy the serialized version, wait till it comes out, but should they read the other one first, the first one first, you think, Neil?
It's not necessary, but they're both so inexpensive that, you know, if you have a Kindle, you can get both books for like $6, and there's no reason. So buy them both, read the Chronicles of Matt Bolster, and hopefully you enjoy them.
Great. So next week, our show, we're going to go behind the scenes of Yoga Festival. We're going to find out from festival directors Joanne Berman of Nantucket Yoga Festival and James Miller of Iowa City Yoga Festival how they create these events, what it costs to do so. Maybe they'll tell a little tale out of school as well. But of course, you know, as Neil would probably say, no names, please. Or maybe Neil would say that. But it's going to be real interesting, real fun. And thank you so much for tuning in. Neil, I'd like to thank you for the real fun hour. I had a great time.
It was my pleasure, Jeff. Anytime.
Okay, stay in touch.
Bye-bye.
And thanks for listening to the Yoga of Marty on the Empowerment Channel on Voice America Radio. We'll see you next week.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Yoga of Money. To reserve your space today for a free no-obligation consultation, call Jeff Bogart at 216-292-8700 or email him at jeff@yogicinvesting.com. Please be sure to join Jeff Bogart again next Wednesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. We'll see you then.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.